podcast listeners. Lost in the Stacks broadcasts on WREK Atlanta from the campus of Georgia Tech every Friday at noon. Thanks for joining us through the internet. And if you have a moment, let us know how you found us, how you're listening, and what you like. We are always trying to improve and expand. Enjoy the show.
Come down to the library. We'll have a wild time.
Books! In the library! Books!
The library?
Punk-ass book jock.
The library?
Were you just putting that book away?
Come down to the library.
The library?
Books! In the library! Books!
I guess you didn't know we have a system.
Where are you, Charlie?
You are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the original research library rock and roll radio show. We do have a system. I am Charlie. My co-host is Amit.
Hey, everyone.
And we both work at the Georgia Tech Library. Victor is on the board. Fred, Anthony, and Jenny are in the studio with us. And for the next hour, we've got music and library talk for you. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our show today is called Taking a Critical Look, and we'll be speaking to April Hathcock about her blog called At the Intersection.
April writes about how libraries should think about the resources and services they offer in a way that is thoughtful, inclusive, and that actively considers how to break down barriers built by privilege and bring in people on the margins of society.
It's a challenge in any political climate, but that kind of critical assessment and activism is needed now more than ever in our libraries. What are you talking about? It's so vague what is written in the script here. If we want them to continue to help foster an informed, educated, and engaged citizenry.
And if you listeners want to join in this conversation, the hashtag for the show is LITS325, LITS325, for Lost in the Stacks episode 325. And feel free to tweet your thoughts, reactions, and frustrations with that hashtag.
And now, more than ever, our songs today are about first steps, having no fear of mistakes, no fear, and meeting at the intersection. Can you guess what the first song could be?
I'm intrigued, but I'm also uncomfortable with taking wild stabs in the dark.
Okay, here's a hint.
All right.
What is an intersection?
Well, it's where two roads cross. I see where we're going.
That's right. It would just be unthinkable to start today's show with anything other than Robert Johnson and his legendary 1936 recording, Going Down to the Crossroads, Making a Deal with the Devil. Now more than ever, Crossroads Blues, right here on Lost in the Stacks.
You are listening to Lost in the Stacks, and joining us by phone is April Hathcock, scholarly communication librarian, or I should say lawyerbarian, since she also has her JD at New York University. She is an activist for many causes that bring social justice awareness to a library setting. She is the author of the blog At the Intersection, which, as you may surmise from the title, brings together her professional, scholarly, and social interests. In that blog, she's written about such topics as finding and fighting colonialism in library services, conducting effective diversity hiring initiatives, racism in library catalog subject naming conventions, just to name a few. And she is with us today to talk about what it means for libraries to look critically at our services, our spaces, and our resources. April, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Fred. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I gave a really brief summation of your blog, and I'd like to start by diving into that a little bit more to get a sense of what it is. And if I could start, if your blog was a book, what would be the first line of that book?
Such a great question, because I feel like, you know, some of my favorite books are books where the first line sort of grabbed you. I think in particular of this book called, I think it's called Crow Road. I don't even really remember the title, but the first line is something like, you know, the day that Grandma exploded or something like that.
So
I know, right? So that, so like that first line is really key. But I think that if my blog were turned into a book, the first line would probably be, thanks for meeting me at the intersection, semicolon, let's get to work.
Okay. The intersection, get to work at the intersection. What do we need to get started on?
I think, you know, getting started on bringing more of our awareness into the work that we do. So social consciousness, awareness of the issues that are happening around us, and particularly issues that, you know, may not pertain to our own day-to-day existence and survival, but are certainly affecting those around us, others around us. So sort of coming out of our privilege, being willing to see the struggles that other people are experiencing, being willing to, and then sort of going beyond that awareness into action, right? So being willing to step out and help, step out as an ally, step out and engage our own privilege in a way that helps someone else get through their struggle a little better.
So the arc of your book would be kind of meeting at the intersection. That's where it starts, and then the action is, I guess, you know, taking off down that road together.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to start this blog?
Yeah, I, you know, it really is about my own sort of exploration of, you know, what it means to start at the intersection and go down the road, as you say. Like you know, I wasn't, when I started the blog, I wasn't thinking, oh, I need to write this down for everyone else. I was thinking, you know, I have all these thoughts about these things. I need to get this down. I need to process this. And then in the back of my mind, I was thinking, maybe this will be helpful for someone else, right? Like maybe someone else is going through the same process or going through the same journey. And I was for a while trying to have these conversations or trying to work through these thoughts on Twitter, which is great. I love Twitter. But, you know, when you only have 140 characters per tweet, it was just hard to get everything out. Like, I found myself tweeting these threads of tweets that, like, went on forever. And I was like, you know what? I need to put this somewhere else. Like, this is no longer microblogging. This has become macroblogging. So,
right.
So I decided to actually put it into a more traditional blog format and go from there.
Now, that Twitter is an intersection, and there are, you know, so many voices and viewpoints there. Are you finding that your Twitter, you know, posts, even when they get kind of long threads, do they get the same sort of response as your blog? And what is the response that you get?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I think that there are in a lot of ways the responses are similar, right? Because you know, the things that I tweet are very similar to the things that I blog about in longer form. But what's interesting about Twitter is that I can get sort of that a response that leads to an actual dialogue, right? So, you know, if I put up a blog post and someone might, you know, tweet me back about it, and I'll see it later, or they might post a comment, or they might post their own sort of blog post in response or taking off from there. All of that seems to, you know, it's a conversation, but it's a conversation that's really taking place in an asynchronous sort of format, and it really is more of a one-to-one kind of a dialogue. Whereas on Twitter, you know, you start out, you say something, and then someone responds, and then someone else jumps in, and someone else jumps in, and all of a sudden, like you said, you have all of these voices that are weighing in with these various, coming with these various experiences, these various people weighing in on this issue that you're thinking about, or these ideas that you're having. I mean, it just enriches the conversation a lot more. So, you know, I definitely, while I enjoy being able to have sort of the long form of my blog to engage in some, start some of these conversations with, to me it really is a matter of sort of starting the conversation and then being able to take it into different venues like Twitter, where it can be a much richer and more much fuller conversation.
We've got about a minute left in this section, and I want to get into one other aspect of your background. In addition to being a librarian, you also have the JD, the law degree. And I wonder, did you ever use that? Have you only had that in the library world, or were you ever in the lawyer world with that?
Oh, no, I have been in the lawyer world. I've been in the lawyer world, and I have survived. I'm a survivor. I practiced law in a private global firm for about 3 years. I was doing antitrust and securities litigation, and just realized that the corporate world, you know, really wasn't for me. I think I kind of suspected it wasn't for me, but definitely confirmed that. And so I left doing that and decided to go to library school afterwards.
And I'm guessing that you saw some of the, you know, the intersections of viewpoints that you're talking about now. I guess that they were formulating even then in your corporate lawyer time.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I'm very thankful to be in the library world, because even though, you know, we still have a very long way to go, I think there's much more of a venue to be able to engage with other people about these issues in the library world than there were, at least in the corporate law world where I was.
And we'll be talking more about that library world in the next segment. We are speaking with April Hathcock, librarian at NYU and author of the blog At the Intersection, which is found at aprilhathcock.wordpress.com. And we will be back with more about librarians taking a critical look at their services and resources after a music set.
File this set under TE279.G85.
Shaken Street by the MC5. That would be the Motor City 5. Before that, Waiting in School by Ricky Nelson. And we started with The San Diego Zoo by The Sixth, with Barbara Manning on vocals. Y'all ever been to the San Diego Zoo?
I have.
Fred's mic wasn't on. Go ahead, tell him.
I have been to the San Diego Zoo.
Amit has not. But Amit really likes the San Diego music scene. You might like the San Diego animal scene. Those were songs about the intersections where we meet.
Today's Lost in the Stacks is called Taking a Critical Look, and we are talking to April Hathcock of NYU Libraries and author of the blog At the Intersection. April, we were talking about the library world of critical thinking at the end of the last segment, and librarians want to foster critical thinking in the students and patrons that come in. Have you found that librarians are, receptive to the idea that there's no such thing as neutrality in a librarian setting? And that's to say that, like, whatever it is that you do or name or promote or control, you know, in your role as being a library staff person, faculty, whatever, that's a non-neutral act. Have you found that librarians are receptive to that and want to look at that critically?
I think some of us are. There definitely is a large contingent of librarians who very firmly believe that libraries are meant to be neutral spaces, and that, you know, everything that we do in a library is about pursuing neutrality, and that we're actually able to pursue neutrality. But I have been very heartened by the number of colleagues that I've encountered who are interested in sort of breaking down that myth of neutrality and realizing that, no, there's nothing neutral about what we do. The very fact of selecting resources for our communities involves not selecting other resources for our communities, and there's a bias in there. The fact that there are certain things that are going to be easily available for us to provide to our patrons, and certain things that are going to be very difficult to provide. That's, you know, there's no neutrality in that. It's not happenstance. It's a part of the way that our society is set up, and certain people are going to be disadvantaged over others. So it really, for me, it has been encouraging to be able to interact with those librarians who are thinking critically, or who are interested in thinking critically about the work that we do and the services that we provide. Not everybody feels that way. There's definitely I think there's definitely a core contingent of librarians who feel that librarianship is about neutrality. But I enjoy, you know, I really enjoy interacting with the people who don't feel that way and who realize that there's bias all over everything that we do, and it's part of our jobs to recognize that bias and to work against it.
So the reputation of libraries, or the reputation that, you know, libraries would like to have anyway, is one of inclusiveness, you know, that the library is a place for everyone, you know, equal access and things like that. And I think in your blog, you consistently make the point that librarianship, you know, needs to look at that. It needs to be shaken out of some complacent lines of thought. Like, and I wonder if you've identified any like deep seated traditions or practices in librarianship that need a critical look to kind of shake them up a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, I think in a really practical sense, and this is something that I see that comes up over and over again in all kinds of libraries. You know, it could be the public library, it could be an academic library. This notion of the way that our communities use the space. You know, like you said, we like to think of ourselves as being very inclusive. The library is an inclusive mm-hmm. place. It's a place for everyone. It's a democratic space.
Right.
And yet we can be very dogmatic about the way that spaces and resources should be and are meant to be used. One example is when I was in law school, some of my fellow black students and I, we would congregate in the library because our law school at the time didn't really have like a student lounge or spaces where you could sort of go and hang out. So we would meet on the main floor of the library, which was supposed to be sort of the non-quiet floor. And I say supposed to be because, you know, we would get there and, yeah, we would do some studying, but it was also, there was a lot of talking, there was a lot of exchange, there was laughter. You know, we weren't quiet. And time again, we would be asked to keep it down, either by, you know, very often by fellow students, uh-huh. But also by library staff who knew that that space was supposed to be a non-quiet space, that there were plenty of other spaces on all of the other floors of the library dedicated to quiet,
right,
you know,
it was
quiet work, and that
like the wrong was supposed to the wrong kind of noise. It's like you're not
right,
making
exactly.
You know, conversation about how to solve an engineering problem. You know, you're blowing off steam about professors or whatever it was. Yeah,
right. Exactly. So. So I see that coming up again. You know, I spent some time working in a public library, and you know, we would hear over and over again. I would hear over and over again from my fellow library workers about how, oh, you know, these people come in and they're not checking out books. All they do is check out DVDs, or they don't check out anything. All they do is sit on the computer all day. And it's like, well, that is what they need, right? That is what they're looking for in our library space. And yet we prioritize sort of the way that certain things get used and how they get used in a very non-neutral kind of way.
Now that you're in libraries, do you find that, you know, decisions like this, people act like have these behaviors, I guess, where they, you know, they see a group in there and they're being noisy without, you know, studying or whatever. And they, you know, make these decisions to, you know, try to get those groups out of the library. It sounds like in your experience, is that coming from a place where it's like an active decision to not be inclusive, or is this just like out of some like complacent, you know, idea of some deep-seated tradition of librarianship? What's the issue here?
You know, I think it has more to do with the complacency and more to do with sort of this notion of this is what this space is supposed to be for. Or, you know, yes, you can have noise here, but this is the wrong kind of noise.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily think it's intentional exclusion, but it still operates the same way as intentional exclusion.
Has the
right?
same because effect.
I mean, it's still exclusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And in this, we've got about a minute left in this segment, and this may be too big of a question for just the last minute, but is one of the roots of that complacency perhaps a lack of diversity in the profession?
Absolutely. How's that for fitting in the minute, right?
Yes, and move on.
but I think absolutely. I think the more diverse our profession becomes, mm-hmm. The more perspectives and sort of lived experiences we can bring to the work that we're doing, mm-hmm. The easier it's going to be for us to break out of sort of the traditional thinking of what a library is and what it's for and what our spaces are for.
And we're going to talk more about that in the next segment. You are listening to Lost in the Stacks, and we'll be back with April Hathcock on the left side of the hour.
Hi, I'm Orna Gerard from Georgia State University Special Collections and Archives. You're listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the one and only research library rock and roll radio show. Which is fine. I'm an archivist. I don't make judgments.
Holly came from Miami, FLA. Hitchhiked away across USA.
Today's show is called Taking a Critical Look. I heard recently, on a podcast, of course, that politics, what we really mean when we say politics, is the process of creating coalitions of people who disagree on everything except one shared goal. And I was delighted by that definition. If you're going to join people with whom you disagree on everything except one goal, you have to know what they believe. You have to know what you believe. You have to know why you disagree and why your one goal is important enough to put aside your possibly petty, possibly really important disagreements. You must have information. You must be able to contextualize chunks of information. And you must communicate with each other using a shared set of assumptions. And so it seems clear to me what libraries are good for. Whatever the intersection of ideas you and your coalition of disagreements are exploring, the library has your back. File this set under PR3330.A1.
You just heard Get a Move On by Soul Inc. Before that, Low Leaf with Take Time. Songs about considering your steps, then starting your journey.
Welcome back to Lost in the Stacks, and we're continuing our conversation with April Hathcock about how libraries can take a critical look at our resources, our services, and programs. In the last couple segments, April, we've kind of been around... we've kind of met at the intersection and discussed the issues there. But, you know, as you said, right at the top of the show, it's not just meeting at the intersection, it's going down the road and taking action. So I want to start with that in this segment. What can librarians do to be more responsive to or embracing of suggestions that come from a place of critical thinking?
That's a really great question, because I think that... you know, it's just human nature to be very wary of critique, especially when you care a lot about what you do. And I think, you know, for all of us, we care very much about what we do as librarians. But I think the very first step is to be very self-reflexive and to be willing to check in with yourself and sort of think about what kind of biases am I bringing to the table here? What kind of assumptions am I bringing here? What are some of these traditions or these ideas that I'm holding on to, and why? Why am I holding on to them? And then really taking a moment to hear the suggestions, the critical suggestions that are coming in, and to sit with them for a while. I think that it's always tempting to sort of launch out into action or into response or into defense, but being willing to take a moment to just sit with a suggestion or with a critique is hugely invaluable.
I can imagine that when you put this message on your blog, or I think you've presented about this at conferences, this kind of idea, there might be a response of, you know, like what do I do if I'm just like, if I just am seized by this fear of being paralyzed into inaction for fear of setting a foot wrong? Like, how do you respond to that?
I think that at that point, you know, you still sort of, you take that moment of self-reflection to acknowledge that you do have the fear, right? That the fear is here, it's real, and it is paralyzing me into inaction. You know, I do not want to move forward out of this intersection because I'm afraid of what's down this road. I'm afraid that it might be the wrong road.
Right.
And then you take a deep breath and you take that first step. You go ahead and head down the road because it's okay if it's the wrong road. It's okay if you head down it in the wrong way. It's okay to make those mistakes. In fact, if you sort of operate from the assumption that you're going to make the mistake, which you probably are, it's human nature, I think that takes some of the pressure off. So it's a matter of not if I make a mistake, but when. And when I do, I'll learn from it, I'll apologize for it, and I'll continue to move forward.
So rather than being trapped by it, just kind of think of that as a freeing things like, well, you know, I'm going to make mistakes, but the idea is to move down the road anyway and learn from those mistakes.
Absolutely, absolutely.
From a librarian perspective, are critical questions about our services and programs, does it fundamentally come down to access, like whatever it is that we offer, our job as librarians is to make it accessible? Is access at the heart of library and issues when it comes to critical thinking about our resources?
You know, I think a lot of us say that it is, but I would actually say that the heart of our, really what comes at the heart of our critical thinking is thinking about agency, which is interesting because a couple weeks ago I participated in this program where we discussed sort of radical keywords or keywords for radical action. Mm-hmm. And one of the keywords was agency. And I think that that is more along the lines of sort of what's at the root of what we're doing here. And that's making sure that our communities have that empowerment, that self-empowerment to choose what it is that they want and how they want to get it and sort of have the power to embark on those quests for information or for knowledge or for resources or for space in a way that makes sense for them. So that sort of that empowerment, that agency for our communities, I think is more key than the access, because the access will come from that, right? Part of providing that empowerment is providing the access to what they need.
So I'm in an academic library, and one thing that academic librarians love to do is form committees. And I just like see, you know, like people that when they want to embrace this, they, like the first step is, oh, what's the first step? Form a committee. And I wonder what you think about that.
You know, I think there's, yes, academic libraries love their committees.
Yeah.
you know, I think there's nothing wrong with coming together as a group, as a small group, and having conversations about, well, what are we going to do next? The key is, and it sort of relates to what we talked about just a minute ago, is making sure that you don't stop there, right? Making sure that you don't stall out in the committee, but that you actually start moving forward with some action. And it may be action that you've carefully planned in your committee, but it may also be just, you know, you just sort of try some things, and some of them will work and some of them won't, and that's okay. Like, it's okay to mess up individually. It's also okay to mess up as a group and as a committee.
I'm going to quote your blog here, and I'm sorry I can't remember the specific post, but some of the questions that you pose are, you know, when you're thinking about things like this, who is it really for, who will it benefit, and who will be excluded? The questions that we need to ask about ourselves.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, we've been taking a critical look today with April Hathcock, a scholarly communication librarian at New York University and author of the blog At the Intersection. And we've met at the intersection and maybe taken the first half step down the road a little bit, maybe. April, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
File this set under Z761.S25.
Given It All by 2020. Come Again, Toucan. Come Again, Toucan by Grace Slick. Those were songs about not being afraid of making mistakes. That is a great tune, by the way.
Yeah. It is a great
tune. I'm feeling a little more uplifted after hearing some... That guitar is... Charlie, what is going on at the...
What is going on?
At the library next week.
You know, I got to tell you, I just don't know. And I got something scripted here that could be a gag. Hey, Victor, go ahead and bring down the music and just reload that. Get that ready for a little bit later. I think I've discovered that I don't really know what's going on at the library. I don't know nearly as much as I should know about what people do and what they need.
Yeah.
And that if there's any lesson, certainly from this conversation or from, I don't know, pick your event recently, knowing what people need, knowing what they need to know is as important as finding out what you need to know, right? Understanding how people access information and their reasons for doing it. What do you guys think?
Are you feeling a little pessimistic because of the current climate, the current political climate?
We're not going to hit the 3.6 degrees Celsius target? Is that the climate you're talking about?
That's a climate that's going to be affected by our political climate. Robin Hitchcock
just channeled something really serious there. I was just talking to people, Amit. I'm not talking about like the acidification of the ocean or anything like that.
You know, when Robin Hitchcock was on last week and he was talking about the end of humanity, I kind of took that with a little grain of humor. But there's been a pessimistic thread that's been going through my brain.
Fred, let's all be honest here. Pessimism is just how we do things, and the fact that Amit, our resident optimist, is now pessimistic too. I'm kind of glad he joined the team, but I kind of wish he hadn't. All right. Okay. Let me get back to where we were. Go ahead and throw me that cue again, Amit.
Charlie, what's going on at the library next week?
A series of useful disagreements will be resolved with conversation and referrals to information, old and new. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're going, whatever crossroads you're at, we are the Georgia Tech Library. And we are at your service.
Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library, produced by Amit Doshi, Charlie Bennett, Wendy Hagenmeyer, and Fred Rasko.
Victor was our engineer today, and we put him through his paces. And our show was brought to you by technology that has outpaced humanity and by The Collective, redefining the library conference landscape since 2015. Registration is now open for next year's Collective, March 2017 in Knoxville, Tennessee. You can find out more at thelibrarycollective.org.
Legal counsel and a coalition of disagreements were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to April for all she's doing and for being on the show. Thanks to John and Araya for listening to our dry library talk. And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
You can hear this show again or get in touch with us at wrek.org/lostinthestacks. And you can find our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and many other podcast aggregators. And please let us know if we're not on your preferred platform.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, a show about predictive engineering and warm data harvesting.
Your warm data is important to us. Thank you for your attention. Time for our last song today, and we end where we started.
Oh, no.
At the crossroads. But it's not really where the journey ends, is it? Now that we've met at this cross section, this intersection, this crossroads. We're going to take the rest of this journey together. So let's end with a track about those next steps that come right after the crossroads. This is Crossroads by Georgia Ann Muldrew right here on Lost in the Stacks.
Thanks for listening to Lost in the Stacks from WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library. Find us online at wrek.org/lostinthestacks to see playlists for old shows, connect with our social media, or get in touch with us.